Blog Talk Radio.
Baruch Hashem, this is Mark Lichtenwalter coming to you live on this 18th day of September 2019. This is Fundamentally Mormon, part of the Zion's Redemption Radio Network. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. We are going to be covering Chapter 9 of The Church and the Gospel by Ogden Kraut, which you can read for free online at fundamentallymormon.com or at ogdenkraut.com. You can find the whole book there to read. So I have posted, though, at fundamentallymormon.com for the text to this anyway. So not doing live streams at all right now. We're just doing the audio program, and I will get right into the reading so that I can go to bed and get up and go to work tonight. My wife is on the line, and she is muted, so she's listening. If she wants to interrupt me at any time, she can do that if she so chooses. All right, Rebaptism, Chapter 9 of The Church and the Gospel by Ogden Kraut. There remains a practice throughout the pages of history which has ascribed but little attention from most historians. This practice was the doctrine and ordinance of rebaptism. Those who have heard or read about this ordinance have assumed it was done to complete mission records or to readmit some member back into the church after excommunication. However, this practice was performed both anciently and in modern times for a wide variety of reasons. For nearly 60 years, in our own dispensation, almost every member of the church had experienced rebaptism at least once. And I've actually covered this in a full book that goes into comprehensive detail on what this actually was, and you can find that if anybody's interested at Ogden Kraut as well, ogdenkraut.com. Continuing, let's see, from the days of the prophet Joseph Smith to the turn of the century, rebaptism became an integral part of the teachings and faith of Latter-day Saints. Scriptural references. The Book of Mormon contains specific references to rebaptism. Nephi, it is written, baptized many believers and ordained men unto the ministry, and there were many in the commencement of this year that were baptized unto repentance. This was around AD 32, see 3rd Nephi chapter 7, verse 26. However, a few years later, after the destruction of his nation, it is written again, it is written that Nephi again went down into the waters of and was baptized. 3 Nephi chapter 19, verse 11. Thus Nephi complied with the principle of rebaptism, and being a leader among his people, he established the precedents for the practice, and they followed his example. For those of you who are reading along, we are on page 116. Nephi proceeded to baptize the others, and it came to pass, when they were all baptized and had come up out of the water, the Holy Ghost did fall upon them. 3 Nephi chapter 19, verse 13. Alma also participated in the principle of rebaptism after he received the authority and had been converted. Then he preached the principles of faith, repentance, and baptism, and baptized a goodly number of the believers. Then on a later occasion, while baptizing a man by the name of Helaman, Alma became so influenced with the beauty and the blessings of baptism that he also was buried in the waters of baptism. Actually, I think this is a really cool part because, like, when he baptized him, he actually baptized Helaman and he went down into the water himself and, like, okay, Alma, that's a little overzealous, but that's great that she decided to do that. I always thought that was interesting. Most people just read right over it, but let's see. Alma therefore certainly experienced a rebaptism, and he came forth out of the water rejoicing, being filled with the Spirit. Mosiah chapter 18, verses 13 and 14. At the final eclipse of the great Nephite Empire, the nation had grown cold in the principles of righteousness. The last plea for the return to the gospel was made by Moroni, who wrote, "And now I speak concerning baptism. Behold, elders, priests, and teachers," so they had already been baptized and conferred, had the priesthood conferred upon them, and they were ordained to offices. So let's read it again. "And now I speak concerning baptism. Behold, elders, priests, and teachers were baptized, and they were not baptized, save they brought forth fruit to meet that they were worthy of it." Moroni chapter 6, verse 1. The elders, priests, and teachers were, of course, members and officers in the Church of Jesus Christ, and yet they were baptized to become members of the church and hold the offices of elders and priests. They must first have been baptized. Therefore, these members were rebaptized after they had repented by bringing forth the fruit of repentance. Thus, the doctrine of rebaptism, like the doctrine of baptism for the dead, has a few substantiating scriptural references. Even one is enough to establish it as a doctrine and practice of the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, and like I was just listening to the president of the LDS Church, President Nelson, talking about how, like, they can't change the doctrines or the ordinances. They can only change policies, and they would never lie about that. And I was like, what about all of the things that you guys stopped doing? Like, you can't get a rebaptism in the LDS Church unless you're excommunicated and you come back, if they let you come back. Like, I think it was Wilford Woodruff that decided to stop, like, have the, well, we'll get it. Well, I don't know if we'll get into it in this chapter, but I know that the book Rebaptism by Ogden Crow actually goes through these things a lot. Now, I rebaptized people whenever they come to me. And then they can go back to the LDS Church or whatever church they go to. But, in fact, I've got, well, there was two people that were asking for rebaptism recently, but one of them says that they can't come until next spring, and then the other one has to come up from Guatemala. So, you know, but if they come, I will baptize them. Of course, there's other people that can baptize them down there, you know, for my friend in Guatemala, but like, this isn't a big deal. I had a friend from Boise come, and he and his wife got rebaptized last, when was that, Kim? Are you still there? I don't know if she dropped the call or not. She's driving in between some places. Was that in around Christmas time that they came down and were rebaptized?
Hanukkah,
I know, but most people are like, when's Hanukkah? Well, yeah, it was around Christmas time. It was actually Hanukkah. We all had our Hanukkah candles and stuff, which was fun.
Right, which was before Christmas.
Well, last year.
Hanukkah's going to fall right on Christmas, so it's exciting because I get that time off. Yay!
Yay! Oh, and you know what? I was thinking, I think I told you this morning, the new house that we're going to move into, downstairs, where I'm going to have my exercise room, I'm putting our hot tub, so we can have a place to do rebaptisms again, and it's going to be nice. Of course, we usually like to meet people in Salt Lake or Provo to do rebaptisms because we've had interesting experiences with letting people know where we live, like John and Sam. And remember that guy that flew out from Philadelphia and wanted me to baptize him in the Jordan River. Michael Simonowski or whatever, some strange last name. That should have taught us a lesson right there, because that guy was crazy. But I'll baptize anybody that comes that is seeking it. Not that they're joining my church or anything like that, but this is a doctrine that was once part of the church. And like when I was baptized when I was like 9 or 10, and I was very inactive growing up. And then I met the missionaries when I was 19, I think it was. 96. Yeah, I was 19. And I wanted to be rebaptized. And they told me that I had already been baptized and I could take the sacrament. And that wasn't a big deal. And I, in the many years since 1996, I've met people that were members of the church that wanted to be rebaptized. And they can't, because the church doesn't do that anymore. Because, you know, like President Nelson said, they can only change the policies. They can't change the doctrine or the gospel. Well, the doctrine, part of that is being able to be rebaptized. And they didn't change it. They just decided, oh, we're not going to do that anymore. No, it's still there. It's just dormant, you know. Oh, they drive me nuts. Did you have any other comments to add to that?
No.
It just drives me nuts, because they will go over some policy or some doctrine that they don't like, and they'll relegate it to a policy, and then they're like, well, that was only a policy, so we can change that, even though like a former leader of the LDS church was like, this is doctrine, and it is doctrine.
I only have a problem when they say they got revelation for something. If it was revelation, that's different than we wanted to change this policy. And so that's where there's reasonable doubt. It's like the last thing that they did when they were like, we have gotten revelation, because I feel like there was this huge push that, oh man, we're not getting revelation anymore, and people are starting to notice that we don't get revelation. So then all of a sudden they ended up starting to get revelation.
But they never like give it to the church. They never like say, okay, let's present this for common consent, you know, which is actually another doctrine. Yeah, they don't show anything either. Oh, we got revelation. Okay, let's see it. Let's see her.
That's
saith the Lord.
So maybe they didn't. Sometimes they like to say things like, oh, well, it's sacred to show people or something like that.
Yeah.
They say something. Anyways, and
that's the
okay,
excuse
fine,
of a good con
that.
Man.
Okay,
the excuse
fine.
Of a
so,
good con man is like, well, I can't actually show you the paperwork right now, but if you just give me your money, I promise you'll make a good return investment. You know, hey,
okay,
con man game.
Well, I just give people the benefit of the doubt. So I'm like, okay, well, they don't want to show us the special or something, right? Even though... Whatever.
That actually contradicts what God told us to do in the Doctrine and Covenants.
I know. So then the other thing would be, if it was revelation, and if it was something that you got, and if God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow, then he will always be the same, and he will not change his policy or his revelation.
It's not policy. He's not going to change his doctrine or the gospel.
Yeah. So he doesn't change that. If he doesn't change it, then why... Was it, 6 to 9 months later, they said, just kidding, and changed
No, actually, the first, what you're talking about, I think, is the whole debacle about how they weren't going to baptize kids who had a parent who was cohabitating, and that was in 2015 or 2017, but then recently they changed it back. But then they did a reversal and they put it back in the handbook, and then President Nelson last night was addressing it, and he was like, we didn't want to pit anybody against their parents, but actually in the handbook it says that you can't even go on a mission unless you renounce your parents. How are you not pitting these kids against their parents when you require them to renounce their own parents you know, before you can get baptized or before you can go on a mission or whatever. Like, it's just like, you know, two-faced crap as far as I'm concerned. I don't know. Kim was like, why are you listening to him? I was like, well, because I want to hear what he has to say. And then I actually feel like I kind of want to, like, do a fair, oh, what do they call them? I can't remember what they call them. Fair use video where I'm going or where he's talking on his little thing and I'm doing a screen record with me in the corner and say, you know, what Radio Free Mormon does, which, by the way, he's done some more. And it, people, if you haven't heard Radio Free Mormon on your podcasts, go check him out. The guy's freaking awesome. Anyway, but he always says, pause the video. And then he gives his commentary. And I cannot wait for him to do an episode on what Nelson said last night, because it is ridiculous. Of course, I also watched a video today about all the TBMs who are talking about how wonderful his talk was. And it's like, oh my gosh, you guys, like, it seems like TBMs have the shortest memory in the whole wide world, because they'll forget something that, like, they don't realize the contradictions. But those of us with critical thinking skills who aren't brainwashed by the cult, we do remember certain things, especially when people like me study it out like I do. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, you're contradicting yourself all over the place. Good PR move, guy. And they wonder why they're losing so many wards and stakes throughout the world with people resigning and just stopping the church. Anyway, Kim, did you have anything to say?
I think you said it all, like usual.
Okay. All right, I'll just continue on with the reading. The Last Dispensation. The first baptisms into the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints were in reality rebaptisms, since Joseph Smith and others had been baptized before the organization of the church, and they were baptized again when they became members of the newly formed church. When John the Baptist appeared to the prophet Joseph Smith, he conferred upon Joseph the priesthood of Aaron and commanded the prophet and Oliver to go and be baptized. The prophet Joseph Smith wrote, quote, he commanded us to go and be baptized and gave us directions that I should baptize Oliver Cowdery and that afterwards he should baptize me. Accordingly, we went and were baptized. Pearl of Great Price, Joseph Smith History, 270. Now, they've changed some things in the modern scriptures that they put out, so they put it all in one. Joseph Smith History is like one chapter now. But back when this book was written, it was different. They actually split it up into chapters, so I don't know what the new reference is actually at this time. Just I don't remember. Anyway, continuing on. This was in May of 1829. Then nearly a year later, it was written that Joseph Smith and those who had been baptized prior to April 6, 1830, were again baptized on the day of the organization of the church. Deseret News, March 30, 1935, page 6. Number 1. B.H. Roberts felt that the number of those that had been baptized up to April 6th of 1830 must have been 9. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 1, page 77. These were all being baptized a second time for entrance into the church. It is interesting to note that the principle of rebaptism was in the heart of Brigham Young even before it was taught to him. When he found out he could be rebaptized, he also learned that principle by revelation. So those of you following along, we're on page 118. I know that in my traveling and preaching, many a time I have stopped by a beautiful streams of clear, pure water, and have said to myself, how delightful it would be to me to go into this and be baptized for the remission of my sins. When I got home, Joseph told me it was my privilege. At this time came a revelation that the saints could be baptized and rebaptized, and when they chose, and then that we could be baptized for our dear friends. Journal of Discourses, Volume 18, page 241. See, anybody can receive baptism at any time if it is like, if there's fruit of repentance or whatever, how Alma put it. I can't remember how he put it. But like, this shouldn't be a big deal. Like, they don't want to fill up the font only but once a month to get all the kids baptized, and this is a big deal. Anybody who wants to go in into the font should be able to have a baptismal interview, which should be a very quick thing. Do you want to get baptized? Do you feel like you need to repent of any gross sins? No? Okay, let's go down and let's get you dunked. That shouldn't be a big deal. It wasn't a big deal back in the day. It shouldn't be a big deal now. But that's not the way they do things anymore, because they don't change any doctrine or ordinances. They only change policies. Well, it's in the scriptures that they were rebaptizing. It's in church history. It's part of the doctrine, but they say they can't do that, which means that what he said, Nelson said yesterday, was a fabrication, because they don't do things that are in the, they don't do things that are in the gospel. They don't even allow it. If anybody comes to me and they get rebaptized and somebody finds out in the mainstream church, somebody could be getting in trouble for that. So we don't tell people, and we tell them to go back to church and keep their mouth shut, just to be a light to the people whenever we do a rebaptism or anything like that. So anyway, 2 years before Brigham Young died, he was again rebaptized. It is said that this was the seventh time he had been baptized. See chronology, Church Chronology, page 94, Renewing Covenants. In renewing baptismal covenants, the Latter-day Saints did not consider the first covenant invalid. Rather, rebaptism was a means of evidence of a double effort to reaffirm their intentions and responsibilities toward God and the church. Such an ordinance was an outward token of an inward faith and desire to keep God's laws and commandments. The proposition of rebaptism was joyfully and very generally accepted by the saints. This procedure, however, must not be regarded as casting any doubt upon the validity of other original baptisms or repudiation of it as a sacrament. It was only to make more solemn and renewal of covenants with God. Correlated History of the Church, or Comprehensive History of the Church by B.H. Roberts, Volume 2, page 286 and 287. Kim, do you remember the hot pots that we used to go to up near Clifton, Idaho, and Preston, Idaho, to do rebaptisms?
Yeah.
I miss that place. Why don't we have somewhere around here we can do rebaptisms that like that? I think there might be one over in Eagle Mountain, Utah, but it's been so long. That was back in 2013 or 2014 when we were there last. Remember when I baptized my aunt, and I think I baptized Emmett there too. And you.
And what was the other guy's name that was being baptized?
I can't remember. Oh yeah, Paul. Paul, who we baptized, and then he moved to someplace in Idaho, and we never heard from him again. You remember that? What's that?
Are you there?
Yeah, are you going past the port of entry or something?
No, my phone's randomly disconnected from my MacBook.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I'll start reading again, and you can get that reconnected so we can hear you better, because I couldn't hear what you said.
Okay, now it's connected to my phone again. Sorry.
Oh, okay. It's fine. Anyway, I was saying about Paul, how like we baptized him and then he moved somewhere and like we never heard from him again.
I thought that he did, maybe it was through your aunt, but I thought that he did report that he was still preaching and that he had rebaptized somebody also.
Oh, I don't remember. My memory isn't as long on those type of things. I know a lot of people that I baptize, like, I'll hear that they've rebaptized somebody else or whatever, and I'm like, oh, that's great. But I don't like, nobody, re no, and I don't ask for it. People don't need to report to me about what's going on. But, like, I'll rebaptize them, and then they'll go and rebaptize somebody else and, like, teach things that I taught them or that they learn or whatever. But I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. Paul, I guess Paul and my aunt were listening to one of my radio shows, and Paul was a little bit skeptical of my claims. And but he continued to listen and he didn't doubt, but he didn't know if what I said was right about my claims about seeing the Father and the Son and all of that. And my aunt said that she felt the spirit get really strong, but it was different because it was like she could feel the presence, but she knew it wasn't like directed on her. And she looked over at him, and he leaned forward with this big, huge, like his eyes bugging out of his head and his jaw dropped. And she asked him later what was going on, and he told her that he knew that my witness was true, and he couldn't believe it because he kind of didn't think it was true, that he didn't know. But like the spirit testified to him, and it made him drop his jaw with big wide eyes, and it was, I guess the spirit was really strong witnessing to him. But it was and then that was after that he asked to be rebaptized. And it was after that that my aunt, who already had a witness, had asked to be rebaptized. And then we went up to those hot pots or whatever they call them, I don't know, in Preston, Idaho, I think they were. And then we did that. And then we're like, Emmett wants to get baptized again. And then you were like, I want to get baptized again. Was it? Our friend from Salt Lake, who shall not be named, was he there too? Did he rebaptize me at that point? I can't remember. I think he did. Yeah. I love it when I when I have the opportunity to be rebaptized. And it's kind of like resetting yourself and like getting back on course, like when you kind of wander off and or wandering off astray, and you're like, oh, I need to do what I need to do. And you kind of like, okay, I'm going to just get back on track. But every once in a while, it's just nice to be rebaptized. And the spirit usually is just very nice when we're able to do that. Even though sometimes people look at us weird because remember the white outfit that I did, that I got for our last baptism? And I wore my white suit coat down into the water and I forgot to take it off. And then those people were like, what are they doing? Oh, but it was a good experience. Anyway, I'll continue to read. Oh, how close are you?
2 seconds.
Okay, you're in the vicinity of the home. Okay, I'll see you when you come in then.
Maybe, but maybe not because I have to get kids ready to do a turn-in version,
Oh,
so I'm
I
around here
just,
on time.
that's fine. I just fed Arius.
Did you remember to bring the garbage out?
I did. I put the garbage out, and I told you he comes here at this time every time. Oh, Kevin, our Schwann's guy came over today, and I was like, I'm so sorry, we're broke. We would buy everything from you if we could. I said the house that we're moving to, they're leaving their fridge. And I was joking around. I was like, it's huge. You could put like a whole family inside of that fridge. And he looked at me weird. And I was like, you know, like at Sam's Club, they tell you this fridge will fit or will like be useful for a family this size. And they'll have like a picture, like a silhouette of a male and a female and a bunch of kids. Like mm-hmm. six. This family is good for six people.
this freezer is good for six people.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you're
that's
like,
what I mean.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's all, "What are they trying to get the market on serial killers?" And I said, "I don't know, but I'm pretty sure that whoever came up with this didn't realize the PR that was going to the public relations catastrophe." Or just the fact that people would laugh and say, ha, 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 I can fit six people into this fridge. But the fridge that we're, or the freezer that we're going to get, I could sleep in it. It's like a coffin. The thing is huge. It's actually bigger than a coffin. It's massive. And they don't want to take it out of their basement because it's ridiculous. And like, I can't believe they got it down those stairs. I don't know how they got it through the door.
They just built the house around it.
Yeah. They're like, oh, we want a freezer this big, and we're going to build a house. So we'll put this in the foundation before we build up the walls, and it will stay there for the rest of eternity. And the thing is, like, from the 70s or 60s, like, well, maybe not, but... it looks like it's ridiculous old. It's a Frigidaire. Whatever that is. Anyway, I'm going off on tangents like I always do. Oh, Arius had his diaper changed, and I put him in 3 to 6 month size clothes because they were cute, and he's 3 months old and he should fit into them, even though he doesn't at all. But he looks really cute, and he's in clean clothes, so you don't have to worry about changing him, because I just did that. And I fed him about an hour ago, so he's good to go.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I will get back into my reading, and I will talk to you later. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. When the Saints reached the Great Salt Lake Valley, a new life seemed to open up for the Mormons. The land and its seclusion presented grand hopes and rich prospects for the future. Here they were at least temporarily free from the reach of mobs, injustices, and tyrants. They acquired new farms, new communities, and new freedoms. These conditions offered them another chance to live their religion unmolested. However, in taming the desert, building settlements and defending themselves from Indians, they would of necessity depend on each other more than ever before. Failures, weaknesses, or apostasy could spell out disasters to their very existence. Under such circumstances, they wanted to start afresh once more. On this day, the 12 were rebaptized. Why? Because the church, having broken old ties in the East, in a way experienced a new birth. Actually, it was because Brigham Young formed a new church. Like the schism that happened, yeah, people decided to follow Brigham Young, but he formed a new church. So he had everybody get rebaptized when they came into the valley as a part of joining his church. Of course, people don't realize what really happened, but as far as I'm concerned, the church was rejected in Nauvoo, and Brigham had to form a new church and then claim that Joseph Smith was the founder of it, when it was actually Brigham that founded the church of the Latter-day Saints in Utah. Oh, all right, let's see here. Because owing to the conditions of life on the plains, regular church routine could not always be observed. For this reason, for non-observance of certain regulations were made by the people and accepted by their leaders. And this is why I say, like, people should, that the church should not have people on the rolls that haven't been to church in a year. They should say, we have this many members on record and we have this many active members, just to be honest. Because, you know, honesty and Jesus, they go hand in hand. Now, I'm not trying to inflate their numbers so that people think that there's 16 million members when there's only 5 million, 3 to 5 million active members. I was just talking to somebody the other day that said that there's over 1,000 people on the rolls in his ward, but there's very low attendance, and they had to actually merge two wards into one, and that's what happened in our ward. People stopped going to church in our ward, and they had the few remaining members that actually continued to go to church. They had to release that of the bishop and split the members up between two different wards, depending on new boundary lines. You know, and that happens, and then you've got like 1,000 people that are in listed in the ward, and you've got like 100 people that go maybe. Anyway, it's my opinion that the church should rebaptize people when they decide to come back to church and have them go through the missionary discussions and all of that, and then if they want, they can be rebaptized, which they ought to be able to do anyway, even if they don't leave the church, and added to the rolls. Just to avoid deception. Hold on. What do you want, Eliza? You can go see what Mom's doing. Okay, I'm doing my radio show, so go talk to Mom, okay? Love you. Okay. That was my little six-year-old Eliza. But now those who, you know, this is a podcast, but it's kind of like just me talking on the phone, because that's exactly what I'm doing. I call in using my headset and my phone into the studio, and then I'm able to, like, take calls and all of that and, like, whatever. But this is like me talking out to all of my friends all over the world. And this broadcast, trust me, I get people from all over the world that contact me. It does go out there. So me talking, this is a group conference call with the whole world, and anybody who wants to call in, as long as they're not rude or vulgar, they can call in and be part of my group conference call that anybody can listen to, whoever has the internet anyway. All right, but now those who stood at the head of the church wanted a gesture of support to themselves and a sign that willing obedience would be given to the rules of the church. This was affected by rebaptism. End quote, Wilford Woodruff Journal, August 6, 1847. I'm going to be a little bit critical about that too. All right, so they had everybody get rebaptized. That's a great thing. So that they would be obedient to the leaders of the church once they got out into the wilderness and it was already a hard deal to come here, they do it then. They didn't have people get rebaptized back in Independence or in Nauvoo or in St. Louis, where a lot of people went to get their wagons and their carts to start heading out this way. Like, why didn't they have them do it there? Like, here, this is what's going to happen, but they wait till they get out to Utah to do that. I don't know. The purpose of rebaptism, as before mentioned, was not just for the individuals who had lost their records. Although many records were lost, the purpose of rebaptism at the time was for renewal of covenants and remission of sins. Rebaptism began with the first presidency of the church in the quorum of the 12 apostles. From them, it proceeded throughout the rest of the church. President Young must have taken quite seriously such irregularities of the camp of the pioneers, as we already have noted in a former chapter. For he now proposed to them a solemn renewal of their covenants, to righteousness, a new avowal of their acceptance of the gospel of Jesus Christ by baptism, President Young himself to set the example. This was first proposed to the 12 and their immediate associates, then to the camp. Correlated History of the Church by B.H. Roberts, Volume 2, page 287. Page 120. Bancroft's History of Utah gives the number of saints in the valleys of this time at 400. On the 8th of August, he recorded the rebaptisms to be almost that number. See Bancroft's History of Utah, 1846, page 265. The practice of rebaptism upon entering the Great Salt Lake Valley was taught and encouraged for many years. 18 years after the first rebaptisms in the valley, it was still being taught, for in 1865, Apostle Orson Pratt said, quote, "That seems to be a kind of standing ordinance for all Latter-day Saints who immigrate here. From the first presidency down, we are all rebaptized and set out anew by renewing their covenants." Journal of Discourses, Volume 18, page 160. Let me just check something real quick right here. Once again, anybody that does want to call in can call in. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. And I need to do something real quick. I'll be right back. All right, I was just talking to my son. So one of the cool things about doing these live radio programs is, even though there might be a little bit of dead air in the radio program, the program actually cuts out dead air when it puts it onto iTunes or puts the podcast into the Blog Talk Radio archives. So it's kind of nice. Like, I was reading one time, I didn't realize I had dropped the call. And I was reading into my headset for like 20 minutes. And I was like, what in the world? The call dropped. So I like recalled back into the host hotline. And I put in my numbers and everything. And I got back on the air. And one of my friends was listening. And I said, "Hey, Alan, how long have I been gone for?" And he said, "Oh, about 20 minutes. And I said, "I read for 20 minutes. And it was dead air." He said, "Well, I didn't hear you reading." Anyway, but like when I listened to the podcast after everything had downloaded and all the stuff happened, like I was reading and then I was like, "Hey, Alan, how long have I been off the air for?" "Oh, about 20 minutes. And it was like 2 seconds because it like compresses it, any dead air. So, all right, let's see here. There seems to be a kind of standing actually, I love that part, as part of the Reformation. During the years of 1856 and 1857, a spiritual movement began in the church and was to become known as the Reformation. It had been nearly 10 years since the saints entered these valleys, and many of them had become lax and inactive. While they were so busily engaged in building homes and irrigation canals and in cultivating the land, the saints were neglecting to a great extent the duties of their religion. Oh, and I do that too, and I know I do it because I'm so busy trying to make enough money to take care of things so that we can get moved into this new house that we're going to move into that I'm like, oh, We need more money for the down payment. And I'm just working like mad, and things have been crazy all summer. And I kept feeling like I need to do the radio programs, the podcasts, and the videos. And luckily, it was a listener from Fontana, California, that kind of encouraged me to restart doing this. And he would always say, well, it's okay. I'll just listen to something in the archives because he hasn't heard them all. Because, like, between Fundamentally Mormon and The Kingdom of God or Nothing, there's over 600 episodes that you can listen to. Like, and it's all this. It's all me reading this stuff and giving commentary. So, like, he's got plenty to listen to, but I kept feeling like I need to, and I still feel like I need to do the videos. I need to do the radio show. I need to do it. But I have all kinds of excuses why I don't do the videos right now. But it was that guy who encouraged me to, and he didn't intentionally encourage me, I don't think. I think he just asked me a couple of times, and then he actually sent me a little bit of money so that I used for getting some stuff that I needed to get so that I could make the radio programs better, which I haven't had the money for because everything's very tight right now. But anyway, but it was my friend down in Fontana, California, that actually helped encourage me to get rolling on this again. So, but I can understand, like, what they were going through when the pioneers came into the valley and they had to, like, build these canals and, like, clear this land and do all these things that many people who were faithful believers, they did neglect their duties of their religion. So anyway, continuing on. President Brigham Young sensed a need to reform and reactivate Israel to the work of the Lord. So he called upon his counselor, Jedediah M. Grant, to establish the theme of Live Your Religion. On September 13th, 1856, that was like a couple of days ago, like the anniversary of it. Anyway, Jedediah proceeded to a four-day conference in Kaysville, Utah, and began his assignment with emphasis on reforming the saints. At this Kaysville, Utah conference, President Grant delivered a soul-stirring oration, which was to sweep over the entire church. Every ward, branch, and mission felt the effect of the message of this conference. President Grant said he felt like rebaptizing the saints over again. We're on page 121 for those of you following along. On this third day of this conference, quote, upon calling for a vote as to whether they were willing to renew their covenants, it was given unanimously, and nearly 500 saints were immersed under the direction of President Grant, aided by Bishop Taylor, Elders Clement, Allred, Curtis, Winnell, William Booth, Major, Junior Payne, and Dinsdale. President Grant baptized upwards of 80 with his own hands. Oh my gosh, I bet he was worn out after that. I've done multiple baptisms, and oh, can you imagine doing 80 baptisms? Your whole body is worn out by the time you get done with that. I've never done 80 baptisms, but whew, man, the Spirit of God was poured out to a great degree, and the peace and happiness characterized by the whole assembly. Deseret News, September 1856, page 228. From Kaysville, Utah, President Grant and his assistants went to Farmington, Centerville, Jordan Hill, etc. I wonder where Jordan Hill is because it don't exist no more, proposing the ordinance of rebaptism in each area. Thus, the wave of reform had begun, and this so-called Reformation was beginning to spread throughout the church. These rebaptisms were not without divine approval, as spiritual gifts and powers attested to this fact. Brigham Young's advice to the saints was in the form of their stern rebuke for their sins and counsel to be rebaptized until they were forgiven. quote, "I have heard some of you cursing and swearing, even some of the elders of Israel. I would be baptized 7 times were I in your place. I would not stop teasing some good elder to baptize me again and again until I could think all of my sins were forgiven. I would not live over another night until I was baptized enough to satisfy me that my sins were forgiven. Then go and be confirmed as you were when you first embraced the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is my counsel." Journal of Discourses, Volume 2, page 8 and 9. Page 122. Hold on here. I need to grab a drink real quick. Oh, my daughters just came in to show me their hair and their bows that are in their hair, my 4-year-old and my 6-year-old. Oh, I love having kids. I was so lonely when I wasn't married. I didn't get married until I was 35. Well, my first wife, I got married to her in 2006. And that lasted 4 months, and then I went and worked in the oil fields because I needed to be alone, basically. It was a bad experience with me and my first wife, and I couldn't deal with her Asperger's. In fact, when I found out my son had Asperger's, I broke down in tears because of how hard it was to deal with my first wife and her Asperger's. And, like, I still love her. I had undiagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder at the time, and between her Asperger's and my post-traumatic stress, it wasn't healthy for us to be together. Amberly, get out of here. I'm doing my radio show. You do not need to be under my bed. She's climbing under my bed. The 4-year-old needs to go out of my bedroom. Okay. Okay, carry on. Whatever. All right. Anyway, but I never had any kids with her. And from then, I wasn't married again until I was 35. And life is a lot different now that I'm married, but I love it. I'm so happy that I have children and a wife and a home, which I never really had a home before. I had an apartment. It wasn't a home. Anyway, we're on page 122. Before entering the United Order. In the year 1874, the United Order was again restored as a practice of the church. Oh, that would be so nice if they would finish, or they would have a United Order recommended, and people from all over the church would be able to come and partake of being in actual United Orders, which is part of what it takes for Zion to be redeemed. And in order for us to live the law of consecration in its fullness, we need United Orders. But anyway, that's a different topic for a different day. In the year 1874, the United Order was again restored as a practice of the church. It was necessary to reestablish that pertinent part of the gospel and begin afresh by living those higher laws. Rebaptism became the means and evidence for the dedication, renewing of covenants, and the consecrating of a pure heart to the Lord. The United Order was a temporal and a spiritual law, and the saints were rebaptized before entering into the sacred principle. The following instructions were directed from the first presidency of the church to all who would enter into that United Order. Quote, "On January 2nd, he, John Bushman, was baptized into the United Order by William H. Wynne and confirmed by Israel Evans the same day. This was the instruction from the church authorities that all renew their covenant covenants and work in the United Order. John Bushman Diary, page 31. December 30th, 1875. This afternoon, Mary Fanny, and myself were baptized for the remission of sins and the renewal of our covenants and for the observance of the rules of the United Order under the direction of L. John Nuttall, who, and that was actually the secretary to Brigham and to John Taylor, John L. Nuttall, who administered the ordinance of baptism, Diary of J.H. Standiford, I guess that's how you say it. Anyway, people were also baptized before going and receiving their temple ordinances in marriage. It was a common practice for couples who were to be married to be rebaptized before participating in the wedding ceremony. This was done in both monogamous and plural marriages. Since the marriage ceremony should be a most solemn and sacred ordinance, it should be entered into with a clean soul. Men and women entered into the eternal covenants and began a new and more responsible way of life, page 123. Rebaptism was a principle advocated for the purpose of helping couples begin the sacred step with the best possible assurance that it would be successful. How blessed were the couples about to be married to be rebaptized for the remission of their sins. They could then, with a clear conscience and in cleanliness and purity, enter the sacred ordinance of God together. September 17, 1886. As it was customary to get people baptized to prepare for my temple ordinances before going to the temple so as to be free from all evil and wrong, I arranged with Brother Letham, who has charge of baptisms on the temple block, to be baptized. I had already made arrangements to get Ida's recommend to be baptized, and at 2 p.m. I took Ida to the old endowment house, and after a word of prayer and a few remarks by Brother Letham, he baptized us and confirmed us for the renewal of our covenants. Diary of John M. Whitaker, Book 3, page 16. They, speaking of George Richards and his wife, were married March 9, 1882, in the endowment house in Salt Lake City for the groom's father. Performing the ceremony, he gave the bride a $5 gold piece and said he hoped Alice would make George a good wife. It was customary in those days to be rebaptized before being married. This young couple adhered to that practice. The 1 foot of ice in Big Creek had to be broken in order for them to do so. Life of George F. Richards, page 8. Healing the sick. One of the requests for rebaptism was for healing the sick. Strange as this may appear, history has proved this practice to be very beneficial in many of the cases where it has been performed. Page 124. Actually, I need to put you on pause just for a minute. I've got to sit up because I am starting to fall asleep because I need to be asleep right now so I can go to work later on. Hold on just a minute. All right, got myself repositioned, and my daughter came in and asked me a whole bunch of questions, And now she's gone and I can continue. Let's see here. One of the requests for rebaptisms was for healing of the sick. Strange as this may appear, history has proved this practice to be very beneficial in many of the cases where it has been performed. One of the first accounts of baptism for the sick is recorded by the prophet Joseph. He baptized his wife Emma for her illness. Quote, Tuesday, October 4th, 1842. Emma is very sick again. I attended with her all the day, being somewhat poorly myself. Wednesday, October 5th, 1842. My dear Emma was worse. Many fears were entertained that she would not recover. She was baptized twice in the river, which eventually did her much good. She grew worse again at the night and continued very sick indeed. I was unwell and much troubled on the account of Emma's sickness. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 5, page 167 and 168. Emma had been baptized in Colville in 1830. This rebaptism was 12 years later. Even previous to this account, the baptisms for healing were quite common. They were performed in the Nauvoo Temple along with other baptisms. Baptisms for the dead and for the healing of the body must be in the font, and those coming into the church and those rebaptized may be baptized in the river. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 4, page 586. Others were baptized in streams and rivers. Another similar example comes from the life of Lorenzo Snow. Quote, upon arriving in Pisgah, New York, I think is where he's talking about. Doesn't say here. Lorenzo and his, the only reason I know where that is because I've been everywhere because I'm a truck driver and been a truck driver for 20-something years. Emmett? Okay. Upon arriving in Pisgah, Lorenzo and members of his family remained there for a season. At this place, Lorenzo said, I was taken seriously and dangerously ill with a burning fever, which so affected my brain that I was delirious for many days, lying at the point of death. While in this condition, Elder Phineas Richards, the father of Apostle F. Franklin B. Richards, assisted by other kind brethren, took me from my bed, wrapped in a sheet, placed me in a carriage, drove me to a stream of water, and baptized me in the name of the Lord for my recovery. The fear immediately abated, and through the kind, unwearied nursing and attention by my faithful, loving wives and my dear sister, E.R.S. Smith, who's E.R.S. Smith? Eliza Roxy Snow. Oh, yeah. Eliza Roxy Snow. Eliza R. Snow. Whatever. Aided and sanctified through the power and blessing of God, I was delivered from suffering and restored to health. The sickness was the result of extreme hardships and exposures consequent to the journey. And quote, Life of Lorenzo Snow by Romney. I think that's George Romney. I don't remember. I don't know. Anyway, that was written in 1846, pages 80 and 81. This would indicate that rebaptism for health purposes were practiced for at least 42 years. Rebaptisms discontinued. Up to 1897, rebaptism was a popular principle, but that year a decision was made that it should be discontinued. It had become a controversial subject, and at that October conference, Apostle George Q. Cannon announced, "We hear a good deal of talk about rebaptism, and the first presidency in the 12 have felt that so much rebaptism ought to be stopped." Conference Report, October 1897, page 68. The following year, there was further evidence that the practice of rebaptism had come to an end. Quote, and this is Mr. Van Cott, quote, just what was your point with Apostle Cowley about the ordinance of rebaptism? Mr. Lundstrom, it was in regard to the ordinance of rebaptism, which previously had been customary when cases came up and rebaptism was requested by parties. And at that point, we received instruction not to baptize anymore, end quote. And that is Reed Smoot case, volume 2, page 156. It was strange that in a period of about 70 years, rebaptism became too popular and too excessively used, and then for the next 70 years, it was done away with entirely. It is now said that taking the sacrament is sufficient to renew one's covenants. To summarize, number one, rebaptisms were performed in ancient times and in the early days of the Restoration. Number two, rebaptism was established as a gospel doctrine by revelation from the Lord. Number three, it was practiced for many reasons. Number four, entrance or re-entrance into the church. Number five, for establishing dates for lost records. Number six, renewing of covenants. Number seven, entering into united order. Number eight, entering into marriage. Number nine, accepting of the church positions, i.e. bishops, stakes, presidents, and apostles. Number 10, healing the sick. Number 11, for the remission of sins. Number 12, and many others, such as preparatory to their missions. Oh, okay. Now I'm really getting into, I'm trying to fall asleep here, and I'll get through it. Number 13, it was not discontinued in the late 1890s because the Lord revoked it. No, he did not. He absolutely did not. There is no revelation that revokes the gospel. There is no revelation that revokes the gospel. They might stop doing it. They might even call it, oh, that's just a policy. But if God told them to do things a certain way and they decided to do something else, that wasn't the Lord rejecting it or revoking it. That is their problem. Anyway, that is their change, not God's change. But because it was felt, the practice was too frequently used. Anyway, so that's the end of that. If you want to read Rebaptism by Ogden Kraut, I would suggest going to ogdenkraut.com/ ogdenkraut.com, and then just click on Reed Ogden's books, and you should be able to find that Rebaptism pretty easy. It's a pretty small book. I think it was the first book that he wrote. The first book that Ogden wrote was Jesus Was Married, which is also an awesome book. Anyway, I'm starting to fall asleep, and we don't have any guest callers on, so let me refresh the screen to make sure that I've given me an accurate screenshot or whatever of the studio. And, yeah, we don't have anybody on. So I'm going to end with that. Thank you for listening to Fundamentally Mormon. This has been a Zion's Redemption Radio Network podcast. And I will be back on tomorrow, hopefully, with the next chapter. Let's see what that is real quick. It'll be chapter 10. And we'll be talking about the United Order. Also, don't forget that you can go to fundamentallymormon.com to read along with us. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you for listening to me. Take care. God bless everyone. And goodbye.